Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
The funny old game.
Hello, welcome to episode 9 of Comedians Talking About Football and a brand new series of the podcast. This is the eagerly awaited Liverpool episode, and talking about the reigning Premier League champions is comedian Mark Olver. Seeing as this is a new series, we have a bit to get through first, but if you want to skip the pre-match talk, you can jump straight into the Liverpool chat with myself and Olver by going to around the 4-minute mark. So this is the second series of the Com Talk Footy Pod, recorded throughout the 2020-2021 season. My name is Sam Michael, I'm your host. If you are new to the podcast, you can listen back to Series 1. There's 8 episodes featuring comedians such as Jacob Hawley, Nathan Caton, David Alfie Ward and many more, plus 2 bonus episodes. So as I record this intro, we're in lockdown 3 or 4, we can't really decide, but as it stands, football hasn't yet been cancelled. There was a glimmer of hope with fans returning for, I think, 2 weeks, and then things went tits up and we're behind closed doors again. Which, although is a shame, is for the best considering the situation, as we want to keep as many people safe as possible. I hope you're all staying safe too. Speaking of safe, I had a right laugh the other day. I don't know if you remember this. I certainly didn't. I was watching the All or Nothing Tottenham documentary, which is much better than I thought it would be, to be fair. Although the music is so dramatic and unnecessary. The episode where they lose to Bournemouth is directed like an episode of Chernobyl. It's hilarious. Anyway, episode 7 or 8 is the COVID episode, filmed last March, when things start to really kick off, pardon the pun. And I don't know if you remember this, but the Premier League, to tackle the global pandemic, took extreme measures. Yeah. To tackle this deadly virus, they pulled out all the stops and banned handshakes. It's hilarious. It shows them line up. They cut out the handshakes as a precautionary measure, the commentator says, before the camera then pans to 20,000 fans all screaming their heads off. It's unreal. Considering what we know now, that was the only measure. Unbelievable. To be fair, that no handshake rule is still in place. I must stress that. In fact, I love seeing that too, actually. Not sure if you've noticed, but full time in games, they do the old elbow bump thing. We've all done the elbow bump, right? Yeah, they all do that. But then they hug straight after. What's the point? What is the point? Oh, well, stay safe, lads and lasses. Stay safe. Because we do not want football to go away. By football, I do mean the Premier League, the EFL and non-league. I cannot pretend to get excited over German football again. Do you remember that? 2 p.m. every Saturday. Yay, Schalke versus Hertha. That was a low point in lockdown. Dearie me. Anyway, with a new series comes a new soundtrack and incidental music. And it's coming from David Hoare, another great comedian. And you can find his stuff on Spotify, YouTube, and he's on Twitter at David Hoare Lyle. So give him a follow, show him some love. Please also follow our social media channels. Search Comedians Talking About Football on Facebook, or you can find us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle ComTalkFootyPod. And check out the YouTube channel as well for loads of extra content, including our pilot of Comedians Watching Football Together, something I'm hoping to do more of during lockdown. So yeah, if you give us a follow, give us a shout, and as always, your listens, your shares, your reviews, your downloads of the podcast are hugely appreciated, and thanks for all the support for season one. Anyway, let's get into today's episode. After 30 years of hurts and 30 years of waiting, Liverpool fans were forced to wait even longer as the 2019-2020 Premier League season entered its most turbulent period in history. It's worth noting that even in World War II, football wasn't postponed for as long as it was during the coronavirus pandemic. But as predicted, the season returned and Liverpool were soon crowned champions, their 19th top-tier league title, but technically speaking, their first Premier League trophy. Talking all things Liverpool FC this episode is comedian Mark Olver, a multi-award-winning comedian and MC and one of the most successful TV warm-up acts in the UK, working on shows such as The Last Leg, 8 out of 10 Catsters Countdown, and recently the Emily Atack Show. Or you may have seen him on Dave and Comedy Central. So this is Mark Olver talking about Liverpool FC.
At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us on Comedians Talking About Football.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, we're recording this at the end of what has been a very, very strange year. A mad one for live comedy. How's 2020 been for you?
Do you know what? It's been all right, actually. It's been definitely a roller coaster. So I was meant to have an amazing summer. Like, I do a lot of TV warm-up. I do a lot of different things. But get ready for this. Two of the things that I had booked in and were removed because of Corona. Bearing in mind, I'm fully aware that lots of people have had a nightmare. Lots of people have lost loads of work. Lots of people have lost their lives, health, all that sort of stuff. I understand that. However, I was meant to be going to Tokyo for the Paralympics with The Last Leg.
Wow.
I even had my hotel room booked, and I had spent about 3 hours looking at that hotel on Google Maps to look at all the nice restaurants that are around that hotel. I looked at the route between the hotel and the studio where we were going to be doing The Last Leg. I had it all sorted. End of August, I was going to be going to Tokyo for the Paralympics, which would have been amazing. And before that,
and
this is a football-related thing, a company who were doing all the fan parks for Euro 2020, all across Europe, contacted me to be one of the hosts of the fan parks for 2020. And as part of that, I was going to book and compare a Euro 2020 themed comedy night every Friday and Saturday on the South Bank.
Oh,
I mean, it doesn't get better than that, right? I mean, those are two pretty good things to have go. And the thing is, like, loads of people had stuff go, and I had lots of other work go. But then you start to realize that actually, you know, things go, things come in. So when restrictions are lifted, I started doing gigs again. You know, Liverpool won the league.
Yeah.
It was, do you know what really irritated? That the lockdown didn't happen before the Atletico Madrid second leg game. Because,
yeah,
like, it should have, like, loads of other games were being cancelled. I think loads of other games were cancelled that week. Allison was injured, and if I'm convinced that if it had been delayed, come back, Allison would have been fit. I think we might have got to the final again. I genuinely think we would have got to the final against Bayern, I think.
Double.
Imagine it.
Straight after, how can you beat winning the Champions League? Go and beat the double. I mean, you've beaten the Champions League in a way anyway by lifting the title for the first time in 30 years. But still, that would have been... You're right, that was quite a controversial second game, actually. Not to bring the mood down, but there was a lot of talk then about, obviously, the fact that a lot of fans, Atletico, had come over from... You know, and those sort of events were absolutely.
It was that, and it was the Cheltenham races were happening in the same sort of week or fortnight, and everywhere else was shutting down. I was having work cancelled. We knew that things were going to happen, and yet they still went, oh no, let's do 20,000. And I genuinely think the same week, maybe it was the Man City game that was cancelled, but. And we played quite well, and even Adrian played quite well, Adrian played quite well, and we even took the lead in extra time, and it was like, oh, brilliant, we've done it, and then it all went absolutely pear-shaped. So, but this is the thing. This is the thing that COVID has taught us, is that no matter how rubbish things are, A, there's always going to be people who have had more of a nightmare than you, and B, things always get a little bit better, and you know, things do eventually get better. So it makes me feel slightly philosophical.
with the TV work then, because obviously audiences weren't allowed into the studios anymore, that must have affected you quite a bit. And what about when
I had everything went.
Oh man.
End of March, April, May, June, July, August, everything went. I replaced some of the August work with outdoor gigs and gigs in Bristol where I live, and touch wood, I've been sort of fairly busy even when a lot of other stuff went. I did a show for the BBC called Stand Up for Live Comedy that was filmed in outdoor spaces around the UK. I've done a couple of Zoom TV warm-up. I've done a couple of things where it's just me entertaining the crew. Which they hate, but I tell them to pretend not to hate it so I can keep getting paid. A couple of little audiences, a couple of things like play-ins where they have already recorded a show and we play it in a socially distanced cinema. Okay. So things have been able to be made, just not as much and not as fun as before.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. And then obviously, as you said as well, a nice distraction during lockdown was Liverpool lifting the title.
Absolutely. Now, with
you being a Liverpool fan, I mean, I could ask, where did it all start? I think the best question to ask is, how long of those 30 years have you been waiting to see Liverpool lift the title again?
All of them, because I'm old. I'm 45 years old. There's a lot of comedians. I don't know how many of these podcasts you've done, and I don't know how many you've done with comedians of a certain age,
right?
But I would say if you're in your 40s and you live in a town without a top division club, if you're in your 40s, you're most likely to support Liverpool. If you're in your maybe 20s, mid 30s, probably Man U. And if you're in your, you know, early 20s, possibly Chelsea. I kind of, whenever I get this thing, whenever I get this conversation, oh, why are you a Liverpool fan when you're not even from Liverpool? I'm like, I get it. I absolutely get it. I should be a Bristol City fan. I live south of the river in Bristol, where Bristol City fans live. I'm about a 5-minute drive away from Ashton Gate. I should be a City fan, but you cannot argue with a 5-year-old me from 1980. Like tell him it's not my fault. You have to blame him seeing that team, seeing them win everything, seeing them wear red, seeing them be on the news all the time. I mean, I could have been a Forest fan, you know. It's kind of, if I was a little bit older, I might have been swept away by Forest. But as it is, little old me discovered Liverpool at that age, and then have just stayed with me, really.
That was going to be my next question, to be fair. I like that you got to it before me, but it was going to be that. As Mr. Bristol, you think Mark Olver, you think Bristol comedian. What's wrong with City? What's wrong with Rovers?
I mean, there's a lot wrong with both of them. No, there's... So I've had this conversation with City and Rovers fans, and they don't agree with me. I've been to Rovers. I've been to Ashton Gate. I went to... The last time Bristol City were in the playoff final against Hull, I went to Wembley and watched them lose there. Because I'm a proud Bristolian, what I want is a Bristol team in the Premier League.
Yeah,
it's more likely to be City because they've got the money, they've got the infrastructure, they're in the Championship. They're, you know, sometimes they do well. The Championship is such a weird... The Premiership's weird. The Premier League's weird this year. The Championship is even weirder.
Yep.
But if Rovers got investment and they were going to, you know, do well and get... I want them to as well. Because, you know, do you know Bristol haven't had... I know you're doing a quiz with me later on, so I'll put a quiz question to you.
Go on.
Back. The last time Bristol had a top division club, when do you think that would be?
I reckon it was probably, is it long ago than the 80s?
1977,
yeah,
I think. Yeah,
I would have said late 70s. I didn't know that they ever had anyone up there in the 80s.
But yeah, 77 or 78, I think.
It is mad that a city like Bristol hasn't had a top-tier football team for that long. I find that mad.
It's passed them by a little bit. There's not even... loads of great Bristolian footballers. You know, there's Gary Mabbott, there's Julian Dix. One of the goalkeepers, one of Stoke's 27 goalkeepers, I think it might be Jack Butland or someone, is from Western Supermare. but yeah, no, there's not a tradition of it in Bristol, which is a bit of a shame.
I think Brian at left back for Fulham, he's a Bristol boy, I think. He's at Bristol
City
for a while.
He's a Bristolian, yes, that's right, yeah.
Scored that free kick in the playoff final.
One day, I'm convinced. One day.
But until then, you saw the 30 years ahead or plus of 1977 and thought, I'm going to go Liverpool instead. So it was that kind of, you were five then when you first became a Liverpool fan. Who were the names back then?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm... So I definitely remember... I remember being 14, doing a paper round and wanting to get home. It was Hillsborough. So the day of Hillsborough, I was doing my paper round and wanted to get home and watch the semi-final.
Wow.
And obviously that was, you know, the saddest day for any Liverpool fan and anyone who's a football fan.
Yeah.
But I was already involved and emotionally connected to Liverpool football team when in 1989 when that happened. So I must have been a fan for 5 or 6 years before that, at least, I would say. I sort of remember. I remember... Liverpool, Arsenal, Michael Thomas. I remember Doug Leash coming in to manage. So that was about, what, 84, 85 maybe? Yeah. So I was about 9 or 10 when I remember that happening. So, but before that, it's ever so slightly vague a bit.
Let's talk about this sort of 30 years between the last, you know, back then, of course, it was the Division One title and then the Premier League title. It seemed so... Now it's happened. When they said it, a 30-year wait, it made you realise kind of how odd it is that it's been that long. I mean, in that time, there's been obviously great success at Liverpool, UEFA Championship, European Championships and everything. But still, how you look back at some of the squad who've been before, and don't get me wrong, this squad is absolutely fantastic. How they didn't win a title under Steven Gerrard as captain is insane. You know, look at all these various players who were there and you think, how in the 30 years did they not pick up a title? Is it just a case that there were better teams out there, that the majority of it was under the kind of the Ferguson years, or was Liverpool missing something, do you think?
I think not just Ferguson, but Mourinho and Chelsea as well. And then when the Mourinho-Chelsea thing sort of waved away. Man City came along, and you know, we got close a couple of times. You know, we got close, maybe finished second three or four times, maybe even more than that. We had all the problem in the mid 90s and the 2000s with Gillette and Hicks and all that sort of, you know, all that ownership issue into the 2000s. Until Alisson, we never really had a great goalkeeper. Like, I think it's... So there was a thing about who's the most important what's the most important transfer business Liverpool have ever done? And I think it's selling Coutinho. I think buying Coutinho is the most important person we bought for a long time. We bought him for like 11 million.
Yeah.
11.5 million and sold him for 142 million.
Wow.
and bought Van Dijk and Alisson, you know, but the first time we had, if you think about all the goalkeepers that we've had since Grobbelaar, David James should have been the best goalkeeper in the world. You know, his shape, his fitness.
Yeah.
But he was just such a lunatic sometimes. Jerzy Dudek, you know, our Champions League winner, we got rid of quite quickly afterwards. Yeah. We probably would have won the Champions League a year early if we didn't have Karius in goal. Do you know what I mean? We've had this history of slightly dodgy keepers. If we had had Cech, if we had had Schmeichel, if we had had who was playing for Man City when they won their was Joe Hart?
Joe Hart was City? Yeah, Joe Hart was there then. Yeah.
So when Joe Hart was not shit, you know, it was kind of we just never had. We might have had Gerrard. We might have had, you know, and that. I mean, that team that got second with Gerrard, Suarez, Coutinho, Sturridge.
Yeah,
I mean that was a brilliant team.
It was. I was about to bring up Suarez because I felt like, at one stage, when they sold Suarez, I thought, well, that was their chance. I thought, that's their chance gone. When they finished second, I thought, right, build on it next year. And then, you know, Coutinho went and Suarez. I just thought, where'd you go from here? Where'd you go?
Yeah, and we were rubbish. I think we went out in the group stage of the Champions League when we qualified by being second, and then Suarez went. Everyone who listens to this probably knows more about football than me. All of my facts are 85% confident, but I'm 15% sure. I've got more enthusiasm than factual knowledge. Football fans absolutely astound me with their with their knowledge of the game, but I'm an enthusiast, and frankly, I'll keep that.
That's what we want here. Don't worry, it's all enthusiastic here. Yeah.
The funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
New little feature we have on the podcast, which is I want your five-a-side unsung Liverpool heroes. So it's five-a-side team. I don't want the Gerrards. I don't really want the Robbie Fowlers. What I want is five players who maybe even Liverpool fans have forgotten over the years, but someone who's stuck in your mind since being a fan, who you would, if you had to put a five-a-side team tomorrow, you're down Filton. You've got to put Filton at the five-a-side courts. You've got to put this team together, dead or alive, and you can just put in five unsung heroes.
So I'm going in goal, my favourite Liverpool goalkeeper of all time, Peggy Arfixfad.
Okay. That's a strange choice when someone says favourite Liverpool keeper.
I love Peggy Arfixfad. There's a reason he's my favourite Liverpool player of all time. I've been doing comedy for 22 years, and I've lived in a house. I lived in a house with in a flat with John Richardson, John Robbins, Russell Howard. Russell and I did our first gigs literally 2 weeks apart from each other, and we're both big Liverpool fans. And so
was that the Ram? The Ram in Bristol?
It's now called the Ram, but at That's the time it was called the Chateau. Yeah. That's and it was downstairs there. How do you know that?
Well, someone's been watching Richard Herring's podcast.
Oh, I see. Mine or his?
Both.
Yeah. Just to let you know, if you ever see two stories told by me and Russell Howard, his are going to be funnier, mine are going to be accurate. So just remember, take out what you want from both of those.
No, I did see your one at the, it was at the Old Vic, wasn't it?
The Bristol Old Vic, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, cool.
Russell and I have had a running joke for probably nearly 20 years now, because there was a moment, I think we were losing to Bolton years ago. Sander Vesterveld let in a goal, made a mistake, and the camera cut to the bench, and everyone looked absolutely distraught, apart from Peggy, our fix fad, our substitute goalkeeper, who didn't look happy because Vesterveld made a mistake, just looked happy because he was paying absolutely no attention to what was going on whatsoever. And I was always like, God, if I could have the career of anyone, I'd have the football career of Peggy Arfixrad, because he gets to play for Liverpool and he does nothing. So I will absolutely have Peggy in goal. We had a player who I think might have gone to your lot after us. Portuguese Ilori?
Yes, he did. Tiago Ilori.
Diego Ilori, yeah. Did he go to Reading?
Yeah, he was. He was with us for he was with us for quite a while, actually. He was a good little player. He signed with us, I think, under Jaap Stam, and had quite a good run. He played I remember him scoring for us, I think, once. It was one of his only career goals, was for Reading. But he was with us for a good couple of years, and then unfortunately sort of fell down the ranks. But yeah, he was with us for quite a while.
Yeah, and it just didn't work out. And actually, so this is what I'm going to do. So my unsung, and because I'm a compere, I'm a warm-up. So I'm going to go four people who absolutely did not make it, because I'm giving them a chance.
I like it.
And then I'm going to go five, someone who will just win all the games on their own. So that okay. is my plan.
I like it.
So I'm going Peggy in goal. Mm-hmm. My defence is Ilori and an Argentinian right back we had called Insuer, who was about 19 and looked brilliant, and then went away to some sort of. I hope you're Googling all these facts while I'm talking. Just so I know I'm not being an idiot, and he looked great. And it just didn't work out for him. And he went away to an under-20s competition or an under-21 Argentinian competition, and then just could never get back in the team. I don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know. We had Enrique at the time from Newcastle, yes. So I don't know if he just couldn't get back in the team. But I just love the fact that we had a young Argentinian, and I got really excited. But he went nowhere.
So he's covering your defence with Ilori.
Yeah, so he's in defence with Ilori, and then my fourth player is a Colombian called Mark Gonzalez.
Yeah,
who we fought for. For such a long time, like to get work permits for, to scout, like, and he was a right winger, and he was, he just looked brilliant. And he was the player that I thought was going to be our Ronaldo.
If I remember right, he was quite a good looking young lad.
Good looking like, boy. Yeah. Oh, I mean, you look at this team. I'm a straight man, but this is a hot looking team. This is good looking boys.
this is the best looking. 2007, 2006, sometime?
I think so. And they absolutely. And I always thought with Gonzalez, I was like, if he went to Man United and if he had a Ferguson or if he had a Wenger, or if he had a really great manager, would he have become a really great player? And I often wonder because. I think so. With comedians, we know a lot about the world of comedy, the intricacies of the agents and the industry and all that sort of stuff. And I sometimes wonder whether it's the same with football, and we just don't know that stuff. Like, I wonder whether if Gonzalez was staying down at the Albert Dock and then became a bit of a party boy,
yeah,
or whether he was hanging out with no one else who spoke Spanish. Maybe there weren't any. Do you know what I mean? Like, I sometimes wonder whether he pissed off Gerrard in his first week.
Yeah.
And so never came. Like, I always think that there must be more going on than we know. And you always hear about some of those players. Like, I'm obsessed with Ravel Morrison. And I always think to myself, so he's the Man United kiddie who just had a really difficult life and difficult upbringing, and his discipline was just an absolute nightmare. But everyone at Man United always thought that he was just an absolute genius and did well for West Ham and even got in like an England squad. And there's an amazing YouTube footage of this ridiculous goal Ravel Morrison scores. Like, he was an amazing player. And I think the last time he was playing in like Canada or somewhere like that. And you just think, and Ferguson couldn't fix him, but I wonder if Klopp could have fixed him. Or I wonder if Jermaine Pennant was around now, whether Jermaine Pennant would be, you know. So that's my four incredibly average, incredibly run-of-the-mill, but incredibly attractive. All those... Peggy just stays in goal.
Well, I was going to say, what I normally do is I hit, you know, we talked earlier, you were on the Richard Herring podcast. He gives he gives emergency questions. I do emergency facts. Yeah. And what I've got one here is that how many appearances did Peggy make in his 3 years at Liverpool?
I think he probably made two.
Do you know what? That's spot on. He made two exactly. Do you know how many he made in his whole career? Which stems from 1989 to 2005.
First team appearances.
Yeah.
Go on.
39.
That's incredible.
That's a career. Absolutely. That's amazing. A football career right there.
Yeah, absolutely perfect. But this team, so everyone in this team has one job.
Mm.
Their one job is just to stay back. They don't even go, it's five-a-side, they don't even go across the halfway line. And then Jari Littmann, the greatest Finnish player of all time, who was with Liverpool for an incredibly short amount of time. He just stays up front. He just stays around. And yeah, I think Jari is one of the greatest sort of unknown footballers, really. I think his skill, and we had a couple of them. We had Sousa, we have Alberto Aguilani. We had some Moriente. We had some really good players, but we had Joe Cole. You know, there were some really Nick Barnby. We had some really good people, sort of towards the end of their career. Gary McAllister, like, just, you know, we could just play him in front and just. So that's the thing about five-a-side. Don't concede and then just let the man with the glitter just have a go. And I think Jari Littmann is he's incredible.
I love it. That is exactly what I was looking for. It's a new feature. I wasn't sure if it was going to work for Series 2, but it's worked perfectly.
Are you happy with that?
I'm very happy with that, Mark. But what thing is, though, I've from doing more research, and correct me if I'm wrong on these, I want another five-a-side team to play that five-a-side Liverpool team. But I would like them to come from comedian housemates, because, as you mentioned earlier, you shared a flat with the likes of, now I'm not sure if this is completely correct, so Russell Howard.
Yes. Okay. So
John Robbins.
Can I do comedians that I've lived with in Bristol and in Edinburgh?
Yes, absolutely you can. Okay. Yeah, because I did see that. Because did you stay for at least a time? I saw it says John Robbins. I saw Russell Howard. Will Hodgson, was he one?
Yeah, Hodgson lived with us in Edinburgh for a bit. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, a good friend. I like Will. Good. He's been very helpful for me. He's a great guy.
Does he do your hair?
He doesn't do my hair, actually, no. We always mean to kind of book in, but then what with COVID and everything, we never got around to it.
Hodgson's not playing. Hodgson's on the bench.
Nice. he's going to be Peggy.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, very much. Robbins goes in goal because he is a goalkeeper.
Right.
I'm going to play myself, actually. Yeah.
Well, it's like a gig, isn't it? If you put on a gig, you've got to give yourself a spot in there somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But also, I'm playing, I live with Steve Williams in Edinburgh.
Okay.
And Wilsey's a brilliant comic. Doesn't do loads now because he spends so much time working with Russell. So he writes with Russell and does loads of other stuff. But he's a brilliant, brilliant comic, but also an excellent footballer. Right. Like he was, I don't know who he was on the books for, but he's just one of those who he doesn't show off. Russell shows off. there's a lot of very good footballers, and Russell is one of the better ones, but he shows off.
Right.
He's got a really funny story about playing some sort of pro celebrity game at Anfield, and he was on the same team as Coutinho. And Coutinho had the ball. Russell was open. Coutinho had the shot. The shot didn't go in. Russell went, "Mate, I'm free." And Coutinho gave him the most withering look of, do you understand what you've just done? But I'll let him. I'll let him crack on. Absolutely let him crack on. So I'm going to put Robbins in goal.
John Robbins.
I'm going to put Steve Williams and Andy Zaltzman.
Right, okay.
Because I live with Zaltz in Edinburgh as well. So they're going to be my back two. And what they do is just let me and Russell just float.
Brilliant.
So they feed me the ball. Most of the time it just goes past me because what will probably happen is that when the ball comes towards me, the ball will be passed to me from Zaltzman, and before it reaches me, Russell will nip in, take it off me, do something ridiculous, have a pop. And yeah, and I'll just sort of sit there and I'll let everyone run past me and everyone come back that way. But every now and then, this is the thing about my my football skills. I'm massively unfit. I've got a fairly good left foot. I've got a dreadful first touch. But every now and then I will do something incredible. Like I am basically my football skill is very much like my comedy skill. Like I am mediocre at best, but every now and then, and there are so many more comedians so much better than me, but every now and then with fluke or magic or the wind blowing in the right direction, I will do something ridiculously amazing on stage and on the football pitch. And I don't know how I've done it. No one knows how I've done it. And it'll probably happen two or three times a year, but you'll go, that was pretty good. And I'll go, well, I cannot take credit for it.
It's going to be my lifelong ambition now, I think, though, to put on that Unsung Heroes of Liverpool versus the comedians who have lived with Mark Olver match at some point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of fame in there, so we can probably sell quite well.
Yeah, I think so.
Weirdly, the comedians are more famous than the footballers.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. I could get the Liverpool players down. I'll get them down filming.
Really
I'll get them
easy.
In there. They're just stood there going, "Where's Russell? This Russell guy going to turn up or what?" And they're, sorry,
what is that? John Robbins from the podcast. Wow, you know, it's Andy Zaltzman from the news quiz. Wow, you know, and yeah, it'll be a very very specific, a very very specific thing. Best footballers: John Bishop, Math Brown, Terry Alderton, I would say.
Oh, really?
That's your strongest footballers, I think.
Terry Alderton? I wouldn't have thought that.
Terry Alderton was, I'm going to say, on the bench for a Southend game.
Really?
He's a good keeper, and they had so many injuries that that, yeah, that Terry, he didn't play, but I think, yeah, he was like in the squad to make up the numbers or something.
Oh, brilliant. Well, there you go.
But yeah,
never knew that. Keeper. That's better than any fact I'd pull out on this podcast, to be honest. Terry Robinson once played.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Go back to 2005, the Champions League final, AC Milan. Do you, what are your memories of that game?
So I live, so my house here is in that direction, left about 300 yards is the studio where they used to make Deal or No Deal.
Right.
And Deal or No Deal was one of my shows for 10 years. I did Deal or No Deal from November 2005 until it finished in 2015. And just before that, in the September 2004, the studio is called Paintworks.
Mm.
I did my first ever warm-up was a show with Russell Brown called Kings of Comedy. And then in the spring, summer of that year, 2005, I did the warm-up for a show called Fuck You, which was a panel show streamed over 3 weeks on Channel 4. Justin E. Collins hosted 1 week. Karen Taylor hosted the next week. David Mitchell hosted 1 week. And it was one of the first TV appearances for Frankie Boyle, for Alan Carr, for Paul Foote. There were loads of brilliant people on it. And it just, and it was a really long record. It was like a 3.5 hour, 4 hour record. And there was a recording on the night of the Champions League final. But I knew that, and we didn't have a great league season that year. So I don't think anyone expected us to win it. And so we just had it on in the green room. We just had it on in reception. And every now and then the floor manager would shout me to go on, and I'd go on and then go off again. And obviously I went on when we were 3-0 down, so I was miserable. And then as the evening went on and we realised what was happening, the football, the recording was so long, the football actually finished before the recording finished. The recording started at 7, and so I was able to go into the studio and tell the audience who had their mobile phones off, I was able to say to them, if any of you are a football fan, don't turn your phone on, don't ask anyone, just get home as soon as you can so you can try and watch the highlights without knowing what happened.
Yeah.
And so that was my memory of, and then I phoned, and this is a name drop, so forgive me, but I phoned John Oliver.
Nice, there we go.
He was in New York, already in New York. Yeah, he was the first person I phoned after we won.
Is John Oliver a Liverpool fan then, is he?
He is. He's a big Liverpool fan, yeah. Yeah, he's a big, he plays football. He used to play five-a-side. I don't know if he still does, with Mike Myers.
Really? He's a big Liverpool fan, isn't he?
Yeah. There's like a New York TV comedy Brits five-a-side thing. And, and yeah, John. But yeah, so, and I've known John for a very long time because we sort of started at the same sort of time.
Yeah.
And we'll still email each other, but it's like 95% Liverpool.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, you would be over the last year or so. Morale at the club is like no other in the world, I don't think. I mean, have you seen any of the recent Tottenham documentary on Amazon? Have you
No, I haven't actually. I've seen clips of it and I've heard lots of people talk about it. But Klopp is amazing. And like whenever people talk about him getting pissed off with fixture congestion or the five subs rule or all that sort of stuff, like it all feels totally as if all he cares about is his players. Like it just feels like that. It just feels like that is the beginning and end for everything he does is to protect those players. And I think that's why they play for him.
I think that's true, and that's the mentality he's built at the club. And the reason I bring up the Tottenham documentary is I only recently watched it myself. Again, a lot of people talking about it, and I normally like things around clubs who were lower down. There's a brilliant 90s Leyton Orient documentary, club sold for a fiver. Fantastic. Amazing. I like the Sunderland documentary. Not that I like to see teams fail. I just like to see kind of lower down. But I started watching this Tottenham documentary. It's a lot more in depth than I thought it would be. The documentary starts at the very beginning. And this isn't a spoiler alert if anyone's. I did see someone the other day say, you know, I'm starting to watch the Tottenham documentary. Can no one please give me any spoilers? And someone's like, well, what do you expect? You know, Sissoko isn't going to die in episode 4, you know. it's quite funny.
They do not win the Champions League.
Exactly. Sorry. Well, that's where it starts. So it starts with them losing the Champions League final. And you can just see that Poch really struggles to lift their spirits back up, which is why they had such a hard start to the season. And I feel for him because obviously this documentary has been made, but you can just see the mentality of the squad just isn't there. Tottenham just have lost it. All their heads have gone. And I think that that isn't the first team that's happened to. It's happened to Ferguson before after defeats. And it's happened to Man City. I mean, I think Man City and Chelsea have lost loads of managers, you know, managers who have won a league, then maybe lost a league and just can't lift them up at the beginning of the next season. And what I think is amazing from Klopp is you had the 2018 final, the Champions League, which felt like the be-all and end-all. It was lost in kind of a really unfortunate fashion, what with the howler from the keeper at the time. And then managed to lift them back up and lift it the next year. And then there's the other thing that, you know, he gets record points for the Premier League, but then finishes second. But again, that's 2 years in a row, 2 seasons in a row, he's managed to lift them up from a failure and get a victory out of them, which I just think is to do.
Yeah, although
2 seasons in a row.
Yeah, although you used the word failure then, and I don't see losing the Champions League when Ramos tries to break Mo Salah's arm and lose in the Premier League because we had a goal. Sadio Mane's goal was ruled out because it didn't cross the line by 2 millimetres or something. Like, I don't see either of those things as failures.
That's fair.
I see those things as amazing, especially when you look at, like, it's weird for Liverpool to be able to claim to be any form of underdog. However, every team in world football is an underdog compared to Man City.
Mm.
And if you look at a couple of people were talking about, oh, Liverpool are going on about their injuries, but they've still got Mo Salah, Firmino, Mane up front. They've still got Henderson, Wijnaldum, Keita in the middle. You go, yeah, but we've got a free left back. No, sorry, a free right back, a £7 million left back, a free centre back, and a midfielder playing at centre back. Like, I reckon our back four, not including the goalkeeper, but our fit back four is probably one of the cheapest in the Premier League.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's mad, like, really.
We've got two of the best fullbacks in the world. I always find it amazing that people don't talk all the time about, you know, Real, Bayern, Barcelona, even City coming in with £80 million, £90 million bids for Trent and Robbo, because, like, they are literally, we got the best goalkeeper in the world, we got the best central defender in the world, but I think really importantly, we got the two best fullbacks in the world, and combined, they cost £7 million. But full, you know, fullbacks are kind of are so important in the way football is played nowadays.
Yeah,
I was thinking that I wonder whether teams shouldn't look at young footballers. They should just try and find the best, like, long distance and cross country runners from age sort of 11 or 12 and just train them to be footballers just so they can just keep bombing up and down those lines, like, you know, like Robbo and Trent. Yeah, that's the future of it. I always think that you might be able to answer this question for me.
Yeah.
If David Beckham was starting to play football now, Do you think they'd play him? Because he's not... I can't imagine where David Beckham would fit in on a wing for a team nowadays.
No, he wouldn't. Do you know what? I was thinking about that, funnily enough, not that long ago, because me and my dad, we were discussing Gylfi Sigurdsson, who was at Reading for a while. He came through our youth squad, and he was touted as like David Beckham in the sense that, and he still is very good. He can ping the ball and find anyone making a run. He can take free kicks, he can take corners, and he's just got that kind of, a lot of people used to say, oh, all Beckham can do is sort of bend the ball, but he could do a lot. To be fair to him, he could get forward, he could take some nice shots, but he wasn't really given the opportunity to go forward because he was stuck out on the wing. And that's back when wingers like Giggs and Beckham would play literally on the line. Their role was to run all the way down so that if anyone came for a sliding tackle, they'd be off the pitch and then they would ping it in. Whereas Sigurdsson began his career at Reading, I think, on the wing and was gradually moved to a more kind of a centre midfield. So at that point, you can get the ball in the centre. That's where you want to sort of ping it over. So I think now, if Beckham was to play, and I'm not sure how his career ended, it might have ended around this in 2013 at Paris Saint-Germain. But it would be a more centre midfield, maybe even a defensive midfield position.
Yeah, but I also think, I wonder whether if he was a 15-year-old now with the boot that he had, whether they might have tried playing him, because they always say, Trent could be the new Beckham, put him in the middle. But I sometimes wonder whether they would have put, if Beckham, because Beckham did have an engine on him as well. He wasn't fast, but he was fit. You know, he was fitter than you might imagine. And obviously difficult to get into a team with Gary Neville, because he was such a good fullback. But at the same time, would a team nowadays, there aren't many just fullbacks nowadays. That's the problem that England have got. So Gary Neville might be a modern central defender nowadays rather than a right back. Anyway, that was beside the point. That's something that I often think about, where David Beckham would play if he started nowadays.
I suppose you could apply that in a way to Liverpool as well, because around that time you had wingers like Steve McManaman, who was a very similar, kind of kept right on the left and was never
was never really a great crosser of the ball. McManaman was closer to Giggs or Keith Gillespie or even a John Butt, one of those tricksy, a Kanchelskis, a tricksy winger. But would McManaman be Salah?
Maybe, this is another central
thing I think about sometimes, playing the Liverpool players at the time, because my favourite Liverpool player of all time is Robbie Fowler.
He's not in here. He's somewhere.
I think he's up there. I've got a little Robbie Fowler statue. I'm not sure where Robbie Fowler would play in a Liverpool team, because I don't think he's Firmino, and he's not got what Mane and Salah also have. So, yeah, I don't know.
He'd probably be down on the line of the pitch with his old...
He absolutely would, in his rightful position.
I was 11 when that happened, and the next day our school had a football game.
Did you do it?
I didn't do it, no, but my mate Craig did. Scored the goal, went on the floor to the disgrace. It was a dare. It was basically a dare between everyone. Whoever scores, do it.
I always think that Robbie Fowler, and again, the man can do no wrong. He can do wrong, actually. The homophobia against Graham Lasso was wrong.
Yeah.
But everything else, that was the only thing he ever did wrong in his entire life. The snorting thing, because people were... opposition teams were, calling him a crackhead and a smackhead and all that stuff. So that's why he did it. He didn't do it, oh, look at me, cocaine is brilliant. He did it as a rebuttal to the fans. And he has apologised publicly and to Graham Lasso for the homophobia thing.
Yeah.
But the man, he's God for a reason.
It's the funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
I've seen you've done a lot of campaigning recently about, well, I thought say recently, I'd say for quite a while, in regards to the Bristol comedy scene. And this is something I think a lot of people have noticed, and the lack of minority comedians.
Yes.
So non-white comedians. That I think that's, we'd all agree that is certainly an issue, not just in Bristol and other areas of the UK and in the comedy scenes. And obviously, there's also, this has been discussed in regards to management and people of authority in football as well. And I think we all sort of, because I think there's been an issue with that. I think a lot of people, they see the problem, but I don't always think that the issue has been tackled correctly, because absolutely, as we have to address the issue and we have to do our bit. And I think I've sort of grown frustrated from seeing, and sometimes people think they're doing their bit by, they might put on a gig and they'll say, right, I've got an open mic night coming on. They'll put it on Facebook. Can you please apply for my open mics? I've got 10 minutes, whatever. And then they'll come back onto Facebook 2 weeks later and go, oh, I've just got a load of white men applying for me. Can I have some women, please? And some black people and some Asian people and people who aren't white, cis. And you sort of think, right, it's all very well that you want your night to be inclusive, but what are you doing? Why do you not think people are applying for your gig? And I think that's been a problem for quite a while. And it annoys me seeing bookers do that. But I have to applaud your method of saying, well, look, I've got this knowledge here. I've got this experience and I'm prepared to give it away for free. And obviously you've been encouraged for people to come to you who are, you know, of people of minorities who aren't represented properly on the comedy scene, more working class comedians as well, which is also growing into a bit of an issue. And I feel for you as well, because I saw in, I think, one of the early days of lockdown, you opened that opportunity up to everyone. And I'd say a few people were really quite nasty to you.
Oh, about the, about giving some of the advice. Yeah, I mean, so there's two parts of this. Number one, comedy courses. Mm. Like, there's a lot of people who are really good at teaching. They really know how to train. They really know how to do all that sort of stuff. And there's also a lot of people who are really good at doing stand-up, and they do loads of gigs and they're full-time comics. And often the full-time comics don't have enough time to do the courses, and the people who do the courses haven't done six Edinburgh shows and gigged for the Comedy Store and all the big agents and blah, blah, blah. And I just wanted, because I had nothing to do, just wanted to give out all of this advice. And I did. However, 90% of those people were white, straight people. And Bristol is a fairly multicultural city. It's not an incredible multicultural city. It's actually defined by the government as hyper diverse. There's a couple of hyper diverse cities in the UK: Birmingham, Newcastle, Manchester, Liverpool, Leicester, obviously Nottingham. But when you look at the comics that come from those cities, especially on an open mic level, they're mostly white, and they're mostly middle class, and they're mostly straight. And it's become much better with the mix of men and women. It's still not 50-50, but it's better than it has been for a very long time. And so I did lots of research into it and spoke to lots of people, Bristolians, comics, black and Asian friends who don't live in Bristol, because in the southeast and London, the issue doesn't really exist. It exists a little bit, because the whole of comedy should be much more diverse than it is. But anywhere outside of the M25 is predominantly white. And I was talking to people about this, and one of the things that I realized is, when you started doing open spots, when I started doing open spots, when anyone starts getting into comedy, the places you do it are pubs. And pubs are traditionally the environment, the habitat of the white man, the white straight man.
Yeah.
And I remember when I started as a working class boy in Bristol, going into some of the gigs that we mentioned in on Park Street and up in Clifton in Bristol, which is quite posh, feeling quite intimidated because I came from one of the little suburbs in Bristol. But I was a straight white man in my early 20s, and I was feeling intimidated going into some of these places. You've seen it because you've gigged in Bristol, but also you've seen it everywhere else. When all the comics hang around outside if the pub's too busy, and you just walk through this little dam of white boys who all look the same. And I will be honest with you, like, we've not met in real life. There is a massive chance that when we meet in real life, I will not know who you are because you look like another white man with a beard. There's fucking hundreds of us. There's so many of us. And if that's not your world and you enter that world, then when you get past that, you'll realize it is quite supportive. But until you get past that, it's just really difficult. And so I want to create spaces, systems, and connections where people can feel that they can do that. And football, going back to what the podcast is about, I think football is quite similar in that football is traditionally a white, straight, male thing.
Mm.
And although there's some incredible footballers, from black footballers from the past, and I'd love someone to make a film about Walter Toll in the First World War, or Albert Johansson, and some of the other, you know, the great black footballers that existed before whoever we think of as, you know, the first proper black footballers in this country.
Yeah, like Cyril Regis, et cetera.
Cyril Regis is always seen as, you know, the first, but actually, you know, there were black people playing in the 1890s, in the 1920s, in the 1940s and 50s, and we need to know about those people a bit more.
Yeah.
But we also need to create environments where those people, where people who aren't white and aren't straight feel comfortable going, you know, and that doesn't just happen. You can't just go, oh, well, we don't mind them. And they go, oh, brilliant. But you actually have to, you know, go out and do it. You also have to look at how many young... So let's say things are changing and things are moving on and things are developing. And then Sam Allardyce goes into West Brom and Roy Hodgson is still at Crystal Palace. Mm. And like the young English or British managers... I mean, Eddie Howe's gone. Sean Dyche is not having a great season. Frank Lampard has been put into this. Like, we're not going to be able to... We're not just talking about... Like football is so behind the times.
Yeah, it is.
I always think about this, and it's something that we don't talk about enough. Last English manager to win the top division in the UK... The last English manager.
Cool. That would have to be... No, he's Scottish. would it be Leeds manager?
Howard Wilkinson, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's not even the Premier League. He did it before the Premier League.
Yeah.
There's not been an English manager who has won the English top division.
That's mad, isn't it? Never think about it. Yeah.
They don't give the young English managers the opportunities. So they're not giving young English managers the opportunities. Mm. When are they going to start giving young English black and Asian managers the opportunities? Yeah. You know?
It's the funny old game.
Mark Culver, you come on here. You come on this podcast. I say, come on, come chat Liverpool. You say, sure. You say, I'm a Liverpool fan. But of course, you don't just get away with that. No one just gets to come on Comedians Talking About Football and claim to be a comedian who knows about football. You must first pass the sudden death quiz.
Okay.
These questions are this week provided by Beano.com, from the Beano, obviously. So prepare for a challenge. We only had one person in Series 1.
Have Beano got a sport page?
Apparently, yeah.
Okay, brilliant.
This quiz is quite literally called How Well Do You Know Liverpool? Are you the ultimate brilliant. Liverpool fan? Cop a load of this footy mad Liverpool quiz.
Okay.
You can't.
And tell me, what were you going to say? We've only had one person.
We've only had one person get 10 out of 10 in Series 1.
Okay.
Who was it? It was Jack Topher, who was a Leicester City fan. First question. Liverpool's stadium, Anfield, used to belong to Everton. True or false?
That is true.
Do I like that?
That is correct, yes.
Why did you pause so much? Why are you being all Chris Tarrant about this? You got me worried.
When was Liverpool FC founded? Was it 1914, 1892, last week, or 10,000 AD on the planet football?
I think it was 1892.
Do correct. I like that?
Hold on. This is the quality of the questions and...
Yep.
Only one person has ever got 10 out of 10.
You would be surprised. You would be very surprised.
Okay.
Liverpool strip used to be purple and yellow. True or false?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to go false.
Do I like that?
Right. There we go. Where is Mohamed Salah from?
He is from the heavens above. And he can do no wrong. He is also from Egypt.
It is indeed.
Do I like that?
Which of these people doesn't play for Liverpool? Mohamed Salah, Origi, Alisson Becker, or Paul Pogba?
I mean, let's face it, Paul Pogba doesn't really play for anyone.
Do I like that?
Jurgen Klopp is the current Liverpool manager. Where is Jurgen originally from? Sweden, Germany, Italy, or Glasgow?
He's actually from Glasgow, but no, he doesn't tell anyone. secretly.
That's locked in, and that's got...
No, he's German! He's German.
Do I like that?
There we go. In 2001, Liverpool goalkeeper Michael Stensgaard had to retire because he injured his shoulder while setting up a ironing board. True or false?
True.
Do I like that?
Liverpool player Robbie Fowler has the record for the fastest hat-trick ever, scoring 3 goals in 4.5 minutes. Now, is that true or is that false?
I think that's true as of time of printing of the Beano.
Do I like that?
What is the name of the bird on the Liverpool badge? Magpie, liverbird, eagle.
Oh, is that it? Because some that's of them it. Are four and that was just three.
That was just three.
Liverbird.
Do I like that?
They spelt liverbird wrong. I should be complaining to them.
Have they?
Which of these silly things did Michael Owen not say? Footballers these days often have to use their feet. Whichever team scores more goals usually wins. If there's a bit of rain about, it makes the surface wet. If I get hungry, I usually eat something.
The first one.
The first one.
He didn't say the first one.
No, don't! Bloody!
9 out of 10.
Look at that. But I'm happy with 9. I'd play the underdog, so I can't be like all Johnny Big Balls getting 10 out of 10.
Yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter the score, because as a thank you for coming on, I will be sending you over in the post a
what
Liverpool shirt here. I will send this to you. And also, and
I wasn't expecting it. The budget of this show is bigger than I thought it was going to be.
So, yeah, this one's went to 2012, 2013. And you can get a bonus point if you know the importance of that season.
2012, 2013. For us?
No.
Oh, just in, I don't know.
It's the last season Reading were in the Premier League.
Oh, there you go. So oh, look at that. Well, thank you. I like that.
No I'm problem at all.
I'm glad I came on.
Well, that's
15 minutes.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a great first episode of Season 2, Comedians Talking About Football.
Thank you very much for having me.
So a huge thank you once again to Mark Olver, and an apology as well, because you didn't notice it there because of my expertise in editing, but we did have some, shall we say, technical difficulties during the quiz there. What with the Beano, well, the quiz anyway, not being quite how I remember it.
So it's a no longer a sudden death game?
Yeah, I'll have to do that then, won't I?
But, or, get off your ass. Print up the questions before and make it sudden death, rather than just going through the Beano website while you're hosting the podcast.
Thing is, though, I like the little puns they do all the way through. So, for example, when you got that question wrong, it says, not bad, but not quite a season ticket at Anfield. I mean, they've been better, I'll be honest, but
yeah,
the cop-out one was good.
Yeah, I like the cop-out one.
Yeah, that's the last time I used the Beano as a trusted news source. Thank you very much, Beano. Dandy questions from now on. Anyway, that was Mark Olver talking about Liverpool FC. Do follow him on Twitter, at Mark Olver. And as he said earlier on in the podcast, he is encouraging people to get involved in comedy, especially if they feel uneasy about the environment. So he's got years of experience, and he's very happy if you give him a tweet. I'm sure he would share that with you and help you out, especially if you're in the southwest Bristol area. But anywhere in the UK, I'm sure he'd be happy to talk to you. Join us next week, where we will have a Bristol City fan, and that fan will be Joseph Parsons, a fantastic comedian. And do give us a follow as well on the social medias. You can find us on Facebook and YouTube by searching Comedians Talking About Football. And there's loads of extra content on the YouTube channel, as mentioned earlier. And you can find us on Twitter and on Instagram with the handle at @ComTalkFootyPod. Until next week, take care of yourselves. Speak soon.
At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
They've changed this quiz, which I've been using religiously.
Are you doing it off the Beano website?
Yeah.
So you've not even printed up the questions. You're currently using the Beano website.
Yeah, correct.
Sports Social Podcast Network.